You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie, on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Coco, Florida. We're on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC. We're also on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, FM 100.7. And we are also heard on the web, World Wide Web. Correct, Miss Ellen?
We are. And that's, you can actually get us on 1510 WWBC. Just click that on demand. And then you can get us also on cedamediainc.com.
Right. And people have been asking us to do some Facebook Live as well. The truth is, our show runs really well with just radio. We enjoy being on radio. We enjoy having a community radio, keeping it alive. That's right. And the Facebook Lives are good, but we don't really get as many people logging onto that as if I make like a video.
Right, exactly. You know, you always do great at your
yeah, just my Sita self.
After show.
My Sita social self,
that's
right?
That's right.
So for the few people who are asking for the Facebook Lives, and number one, the feed doesn't come out as well when we did it. It's kind of like it's blurry sometimes.
Yeah, and it's tough to see.
So people who do want to listen, they could go on to Sita Media Inc. and they can listen to all the podcasts. And we also have it posted on the station.
That's right. We have it posted on the station. We also we do have it posted on Facebook as well, so they'll be able to get them.
Yeah, so thank you for all the ideas. Thanks to all our sponsors. Today's show is sponsored for the what is it called? The Central Food Bank?
Second Harvest
Food Bank. That's been sponsored by a really good friend of mine, and I'll have to tell you the name of the gentleman. So for all our listeners who are tuning in today, we have two amazing guests today. We have our friend Jennifer Glass, who's calling in. She was a recording artist.
Correct.
Now she has her own company. And we have our friend Greg Higgison. Did I say it correct? Higgison?
Yes.
Yeah, that's such a nice name. He is with the Second Harvest Food Bank. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
So we're going to have you on the second segment, but it's so nice to have him in the studio socially distanced.
Exactly.
Right?
We're doing such a good job.
Yeah, it's so wonderful to have people in the community that are giving, like we always say, their talent, gift, and abilities to others. And Greg, you really are one of those.
Thank you
so
very much.
We can't wait to hear what you do for the food bank. And you are the chief developmental officer.
Yeah, correct. That's just the fancy way of saying fundraising and marketing.
And you do a lot. I mean, you've been with them for 24 years?
I have. Yeah, I've seen a lot of change during that period of time. But in the last 6 weeks is the biggest change we've ever seen.
Wow. And it's like an ever-growing fundraising and marketing effort that you have to put out all the time. Because you need people. Because you guys distribute food to so many counties, six counties.
Mm-hmm.
That's Brevard, Lake, Orange, and which other one?
Osceola, Seminole, Lake, and Volusia County.
Wow, we can't wait to speak with you in the second half of the program, because the first half of the program we have Jennifer Glass calling in. But before we talk to Jennifer, Ellen, we want to talk to our listeners a little bit about what's going on with this COVID-19. And, ask people to just use common sense and stay safe.
Yes.
Pretend if you don't have a grandparent, you don't have family, you don't have friends, pretend you do and protect the unknown. You don't know what you're bringing home from other people or other places, or other surfaces. And listen to the experts.
Exactly.
You know, I've been listening to my friend, my distant friend there, Dr. Anthony Fauci. You know, I like him so much.
I know you do.
I just think it's fascinating to watch what he's doing and to follow his career for the last, 40 years? He's
yes.
been advising our country about infectious disease and things. And then, of course, my Sanjay Gupta, who I like so much. So some of the things that a friend of mine sent for me, and she asked me to mention it on a show this morning, that people are seeing, human beings all over the world are seeing, that has happened since the world went on lockdown with this COVID-19. We're noticing no school shootings. Traffic is down. It's not as congested as before. Gas is affordable. People are being kinder, more gentler. You have landlords who are saying, we'll waive the rent. We have kids at home with their families. We have parents at home taking care of their children. We have more men spending money on their children's shoes and clothes instead of bars, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
If you have disposable income, spend it at home first, then go to the bar, right? We have hectic schedules that are replaced by naps and rest and relaxation. And what about the Himalayas? They're saying you could see it.
Yeah, exactly. And even the water's clearer. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the river, but even the water's clearer than it has been before.
Have you noticed anything, Greg?
One of the things, I'm from the Chicago area, and one of the things that's fascinated me is that Lake Michigan is so clear now that you can actually see wrecks that were never visible before from the top of the water.
Yeah.
Shipwrecks.
And also that people are paying more attention. They're more conscious to their health and hygiene. People are actually brushing their teeth, combing their hair, and making their bed, which was my mother's mantra.
Right.
If you do those three things, you're set for the day. And people are taking time to smell the roses and plant that garden if you're allowed to go into Home Depot.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I think in a way, we do have to look at the positives. And we met a nice person like Greg Higginson through this, because I watched what they were doing too for the people here in Central Florida, and I love it. And then, of course, we have other people who are doing other things, other artists, people are singing, people are dancing, people are Zooming. I learned how to Zoom.
Zoomed
with my cousins in London. Mm-hmm. And then, wouldn't you know, I ended up Zooming with the Biden campaign as well, which was great.
Nice.
Got a few nice things with the woman for Biden. It was great.
Yeah.
And so my friend Jennifer Glass is on, and I've been trying to get Jennifer to come on the show for a while. She was supposed to come in person with us, and she couldn't come, so we're doing it socially distant. She's calling in. And a little background about Jennifer, I don't know if she considers herself still a recording artist, but she grew up here in Saratoga. She grew up in New York, actually. She was fond of music, and she was also a skilled pianist. And she's going to talk to us a little bit about herself and the company that she formed. And so I know she's on the line. So Jennifer Glass, hello, and welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm glad to be with you sort of virtually in a very safe distance. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, you know, I did learn how to Zoom, and then I was like, well, should I call Ellen and ask if we should do the show on Zoom? And I'm like, no, our friend Paul takes good care of us here in the studio and makes sure that we're socially distanced, so we're fine, and we're going to be safe. So, So Jennifer, you and I met through mutual friends, and we have a lot of things in common, and I like you, and I enjoy watching your post, and we've known each other for a while, and thank you for what you're doing and for what you bring to this earth as well. You have a lot of experience, and Lord knows you've had a challenge in life. Lots of trials and tribulations. So I'm glad you're still upright, right, Ellen? We like women who go through a lot of stuff and they still can hold their head up high and say, look out world, here I come. And Jennifer is one of those.
Yes. You've got inspiration. It was such a great bio that you sent us, and I'm excited for you to share it in virtual person.
Yeah, we heard your song. I love the song. It's beautiful. I hope there's a way you could still market that online or to other people who'd like to hear it. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you recorded that song and all that.
Sure. Okay, so we're going to go back a little bit here to the early 2000s. And I've always loved being performing and singing is what I grew up doing. My mother was actually the pianist. I wish I could call myself a pianist, but my mother was the pianist. So I had that musical upbringing. And when I was fortunate enough to be able to get into the studio in 2003. I recorded 5 songs, and one of those songs was called Dreamin', and it was a dance song. It was released for promotional purposes to radio stations and record pools all over the country, and just kind of lightning in a bottle, it just shot to number one all over the country in various markets, and it was amazing. I had that taste of success of
stardom. Taste of stardom.
I guess so. Being able to hear yourself on the radio and be able to perform in places, you know, with people singing your music back to you, and just really was very blessed to have an experience that so many people are way more talented than I am, and work, you know, to have that kind of thing happen to them and never get to have it. So I felt just incredibly blessed for that experience.
Well, it's one more thing under your belt, but along the way, you've had so many challenges to face,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
you were harassed by someone, threatened. How did you live through that? And I mean, you were pretty young.
Yeah, I guess I've always been someone who's a little bit more of the trusting, naive would be a good word to believe that people have your best interest at heart. But as so many people, especially women, I think can attest in the entertainment business, it's very easy to be taken advantage of, and it's very easy for people to say, well, I can get you this if you will give me this. And when you say no, the response that you get can be scary, you know, it can be violent, it can be threatening. And so I dealt with a few situations from different people who wanted to basically control, you know, my success or just my life in general. And it was a struggle for quite a few years to sort of escape all of that.
Well, we're very grateful, and I commend you for getting away from it and finding yourself and finding your voice, because I think it takes a lot of people like us. You know, we are all Erin Brockovich in our own way, that we have mm-hmm. a story to tell, and our mm-hmm. stories in turn help so many other people. I mean, you mm-hmm. know, I have 18 brothers and sisters, and when you have 18 brothers and sisters, fortunately or unfortunately, every single issue that comes up in life, you know about it, whether it's a failed mm-hmm. business, whether it's abuse, whether it's, you know, a higher education. No money, some crooks, some professionals, you have it all, you know? And so I could probably write a book about everything in the world as well, but your story is compelling because there's so many young people that want to break into show business, sing or dance or act, and they need somebody like you to tell them, slow down and be careful and have people around you that are loyal and trustworthy.
Right. It was hard for me that the person that was supposed to be protecting me in a way was the person that ended up needing protection from when it came to my music career. So, you know, it's hard when you're young. You don't want to listen to the advice of other people. So as much as I would love to advise young people,
you know, some won't listen. Yeah.
They've heard it before, you know, but they're like, I know what I'm doing.
So how did you end up in Melbourne, Florida?
I actually moved down here. My mother passed away in January of 1995, and I was living in upstate New York, in Saratoga Springs, where I grew up. And I just really had always dreamed of something bigger than my hometown, as much as I love it to death. And had friends down here in Melbourne. Actually, they were in Palm Bay at the time, and said, you know, if you ever want to move down, we've got a place for you. That's what kind of brought me to this area. And I just love Brevard County. I've traveled all over the place, and every time I go other places, I'm always happy to come back here. You know, I just really love calling Brevard home.
Yeah, I think most of us feel that way about Brevard.
Yeah.
So now you have your own video production business. Mm-hmm. What led you to start this company?
I think I've always obviously been creative, and I did not want to continue pursuing a music career. I sort of closed that chapter of my life in 2008, And I was working out at the Space Center, actually, as a personal trainer for a few years. And when they shut down the space program, they were basically laying off, as we know, the vast majority of people who worked out there. I was one of those people. And at the time, I really had been, I'm self-taught when it comes to video, and I really wanted to do something in video production. But without a degree, there was no job really that was going to be, you know, available to me. I reached out to a few local video production companies to see if maybe I could get some type of internship. And there was no opportunities available. So I figure where there is no door available for you, you paint your own door and you walk through it. And I started my own business.
I love that. You should write that down quickly before you forget how to say it. Because that goes right along with the name of your company. It's Creative Concept Director and Producer of Great Scott Productions. I mean, it's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, I at that time, this was 2011, and there really wasn't a lot of options for businesses to hire someone to produce marketing videos. There was a lot of wedding videography, of course. And I just said, well, that lane is already taken. And I don't really see a lot of people doing YouTube videos. That's what I'm going to do. And so that's where I started out. And I still do those types of videos, but so much more as well.
So, sounds like you really have a passion for it. So when you market your videos, are you putting them on YouTube and then people are looking at them and you're getting ads and stuff like that? Or are you just starting out, or how does it work?
So there's so many different ways that people can use video. And YouTube certainly is a huge place. Yes, all of people's videos should be on YouTube. They should be building their YouTube library, and also, of course, having lots of video on their website, social media, and not to mention also if a business has video monitors, TV monitors in their business, there's, you know, creative content they could be creating to play in their business, in their store. So there's endless options, you know, client testimonial videos and.
Because, you know, you hear stories of people that says, oh, I made a video of my four-year-old, and all of a sudden the four-year-old is a star, and there's tons of ads on YouTube with this four, and I'm like, what? My children did that. How come I didn't think about doing that, you know? I'm
right.
Like, what happened? Or, you know, like, I've always believed that it doesn't matter what race you are, what's the color of your skin, your hair, your religion, where you come from. If you have a good idea and you're respectful towards others and you have it in your heart to do something, we can all do it. And it just takes, you know, that one person like you did to say, you know what, if I can't get a job in this field, I'll do it myself. And so you took your life experience, you put it all into one, and you just did it. And I'm proud of you. But how has your business evolved over the past, I think, 9 years you've been in business? Mm-hmm. So how has it evolved?
Well, I've definitely spent a lot of time sort of bobbing and weaving and facing different challenges that have come as far as, you know, when people started getting smartphones and everyone now has a video camera on their smartphone. And so that made everybody think, oh, I can do videos on myself. And so you have to retrain to people to understand that there's a huge difference between video that you shoot on your cell phone and professional video. And the people who sort of understand the difference between, or I shouldn't say the difference between, but that the video that you put out is a direct reflection of how you run your business, or at least it's perceived that way. So getting people to understand that has been a challenge that I've had to work with over the years and still to this day. But my business has grown as far as we've added in the past year, we've added photography, which I avoided for a long time because I really felt like it was important for me to be true to, we are strictly video. But there's an opportunity there for me to expand and secure my financial future, which is, you know, it's important, and I haven't maybe made it as important as it should be.
Yeah.
Financial security is important. So I've just been really excited in the past year to see the way the photography side of my business has developed as well. No pun intended.
Yeah. Well, our friend, we have a friend in the studio, Greg Higgison. He's the chief developmental officer at Second Harvest Food Bank of Central Florida. And maybe one of these days, if you cross paths, you could do some video for them.
Absolutely.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Sure would. Yeah, yeah. We always need that kind of help.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say it's a little bit, it's ironic that when I started my business in 2011, I decided that I thought it was very important to do a fundraiser every year to be able to give back, even though I had so little. I just thought that that was something I really wanted to do. And I chose Second Harvest Food Bank as the charitable organization that I would raise money for, because I have been homeless. I have needed to rely on food banks in my life. And I know how extremely important it is. I get that there's a million organizations that need to raise money. But when it comes to what people need, we need food every single day. We need it every few hours.
Yeah.
And so I thought that that was how I would give back. So I just think it's really amazing that...
That's why I thought it would have been great if you could have come in the studio. I know.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we've been hearing the term food insecurity so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And it's the truth. You know, there are so many people that can lay their head on a pillow and go to bed at night and know that they have a refrigerator stocked or a pantry stocked, or they have money to buy. But I don't think they worry so much about those who are living in the woods, or people who are living paycheck to paycheck, or people who just lost their jobs. And it's sad. We need to care, all of us collectively, you know, for the human race, because it's not about us. It's about all of us, not just us. You know what I mean?
Right. And even just something so small as, my donation wasn't anything gigantic, but I know that it helped in some small way. And if everybody just does what they can, then I feel like we're called to do that. We need to do that.
Right. And there's so much information out for all the good nonprofits that are doing great things for the community that people pretty much read and understand where they're putting their time, effort, money, and volunteering hours as well. So, of course, you have a business, and we're all hearing about the small businesses that are affected by the coronavirus, and we're hearing about the people who still have to pay their employees that have no money in the bank, and they have to also look out for this loan that's supposed to be coming out today. How has this pandemic, COVID-19, this dreadful COVID-19, I don't even like to say it, how has it affected you and your business?
Well, it pretty much shut me down as soon as people were sort of realizing this was getting real. most of the businesses that I do videos for are smaller businesses. So everyone, you know, is just kind of tightening their belt. And in that that caution mode, we don't want to necessarily spend money right now on anything that isn't 100% essential. So the people that I sort of had that I was getting ready to be doing video work for, you know, everything got put on the back burner. So it's been tough. It's been real tough. And I went into this already kind of in a bad position. I had just launched a new division of my business to do boudoir photography. So I'd already just kind of invested a lot of money in a brand new business or a brand new division of my business.
You're trying to make women feel confident and beautiful with that end of your business. And we need it. We need that pick-me-up every once in a while. We do.
I think it's so important. Yeah. So, you know, I have a lot of faith that it's all going to work out, but it is, I don't know how. I don't know where the money's going to come from. I don't know how the bills are going to get paid. I'm hoping that businesses, as they start to look towards the future and reopening, I'm still able to produce video for people. So it's not that I can't. It's just people have to be willing to spend, you know, their money, and I get that it's challenging and it's hard for everyone.
That's right. So, yep. So what do you tell us? Something exciting that's going to be coming up soon with your company. I know you're hoping that people start opening up their wallets again, or their credit cards, or however, to pay for advertising. But I'm sure you have aspirations to expand and do other things. Tell us something that's in the works.
Something that's in the works. Well, I'm trying to think what's in the works other than just simply really trying to work on some exciting
new marketing. You were doing something called Porch Traits?
Oh, okay, yes. Well, that was something that was kind of taking off in late March in states that were getting affected by the coronavirus, you know, a little bit earlier than Florida, such as New York. And so I did do some porch trips. Basically, you have families that are, you know, hunkered down at home, and they don't have really anything to do, any reason to get dressed up. And this craze, if you want to call it that, was kind of sweeping across the country. Photographers going to these families' homes, you know, standing by the street, taking a photo of the family on their front porch.
That sounds beautiful. I have a lovely property, and you know what? Every once in a while, we get dressed up just so we could take a picture in our front yard or our backyard or in the hammock. And it does feel good because you're capturing memories that ordinarily you won't, but you have the time for it.
Right, right. So it was really, really something very different from anything I normally do. So it was a lot of fun. The families were extremely excited about it, like really excited about it. And I get it because they had been, you know, kind of shut in their house for a couple of weeks at the time and going a little bit stir crazy. So they were very excited to, you know, do their hair and makeup and put on cute outfits. And the kids would have put on costumes and whatever they wanted to do to just make it a really fun photo.
Well,
some families did traditional, and I even got to photograph a proposal, which was incredible.
That is, well, we have 1 minute left, and I just wanted to say I am planning to do a ladies' luncheon when this COVID-19 goes away, either at my home or maybe the Suntory Country Club. We'll have to see. And I'm hoping you would do me the honor of singing your song at my event.
Oh, my goodness. I don't...
don't worry. We have Ellen. We have Ellen. She'll know how to make that happen.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Exactly
she,
right.
She can make anything happen. Remember, we had a singer at my last event. We had Drea. Remember?
Right.
We had Drea. She
we
came.
Make it, we make
and
it
she,
work.
We actually, she, I think our event was her debut. And she really got a lot of likes and stuff on my Facebook. It was awesome.
Did. So, Jennifer, what's your email or how do people get in contact with you?
Probably the best way would just be to go to the website, greatscottproductions.net. All the contact information's on there, and they can watch lots of fun videos.
Fantastic. Well, those listeners that are out there that have a small business, make sure you connect with Jennifer Glass with Great Scott Productions. We're going to take a quick break, Sita, and listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, Enso, and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haul away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MedFast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. It is sunny today. It's beautiful outside, actually. What a wonderful day to wake up and breathe and just be alive and enjoy this planet today. No one knows what happens tomorrow, but today we're alive and well and we're enjoying our show, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're here on AM 1510. We're on FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7, and this hour goes by so quickly in my life.
It does.
Like, we sit down in the studio, before you know it, we're done. Like,
prepare for 8 hours for a 1 hour show.
So the second half of our show is with Greg Higgison, and I just found out why he is the Chief Development Officer at Second Harvest Food Bank of Central Florida. And the Second Harvest Food Bank of Central Florida collects, stores, and distributes donated food through a powerful hunger relief network. And this spans 6 counties, my dear listening friends. And he's going to tell us which 6 counties, if he can.
Yeah, sure, Sita. We are based in Orange County, but we also have operations in Brevard County and Volusia County. And we serve, as well as those 3, Seminole County, Osceola County, and Lake County in addition. So lots of people in those 6 counties, about 3.5 million people actually live in those counties. So if just that little group of counties were a state in the United States, it would be something like the 23rd largest state.
Can you believe that? Wow. So I've read that last year the food bank distributed, 63 million meals?
Yeah, enough food for 63 million meals. That's correct.
Thank you. Just thank you. That's awesome.
Oh, I appreciate that, but I wish I could tell you it was enough. We did not fully meet the need with distributing that much food, unfortunately.
And the places you all distribute the foods are places like soup kitchens, women's shelters, senior daycares and centers, daycares for children, the homeless. How do you get your referrals? Where do you find the people? Do they come to you, or you get referrals?
Yeah, so we have a network, as you mentioned, of about 550 what we call partner nonprofit organizations out there throughout all of those counties. And they are emergency food pantry programs where somebody can come and get a box or a bag of food to get them through a difficult time. Sometimes they're a shelter program, as you mentioned. There are a lot of nonprofits out there that have food assistance or feeding as part of their mission. Sometimes it's their only mission, but usually it's part of a wider array of services for people. And, you know, when they can count on a reliable source that's cost effective to get that donated food, it really helps them concentrate and grow other parts of their program. So we really rely on that network to get that food out there.
The name, Second Harvest Food Bank, where did the name come from?
Yeah, originally the national network of food banks was called Second Harvest. It's today called Feeding America. You might be familiar with that logo. You see it in commercials on TV and so forth. But originally the name came from the Old Testament of the Bible. There was a sort of a mandate that the second harvest of the field should be left in the field for the poor to come along and pick up. And so farmers were told, don't go back through your field twice. Leave what naturally fell there for the people to come along afterwards and pick it up. So we are really a reflection of food consumer behavior as an organization, in that we get lots of corporate food industry type donations. That's the majority of the food that we distribute comes from the food industry itself. So it really is like the second harvest. It's that extra food that exists in our society, and it's just a way to make it available.
Good use of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you're transforming so many lives by doing that too.
We live in a very food-rich country, and that's the good news. The other side of it, of course, is that people can't always afford enough of it. And when we have low-wage issues like we know are out there right now, and income disparities and things like that, it makes it really tough to be able to afford all the time the kinds of food that people need to feed themselves and their families. So it's an important part. It's certainly not the whole solution to hunger, but it's an important part of it.
Yeah, we've all seen, like Jennifer Glass was talking about, videos, right? We've all seen the videos on Facebook, on social media, with the people who are cutting the beans in the fields.
Right.
On their hands and knees, you know, getting celery together and parsley and beans and oranges and whatever it is in the fields. And you know that that's part of it. But then there's a second part to that food where it goes, and it's a food bank. So tell our listeners, what exactly is a food bank?
Yeah, you know, you hear a lot of terms when you talk about food assistance. You hear food pantries, emergency pantries, and shelters and things. A food bank is really that central hub. We are designed to accept very large quantities of both perishable and non-perishable food, and put that out there in a way, in a food safe way, that's really efficient through that network of providers. And what it does, again, for them is allow them to concentrate on what they do best, which is helping people, not necessarily having to focus on, you know, going out and you know, beating the bushes to find all those food resources themselves. And then you combine that with the fact that these food company donors like to deal with one source typically that they can trust, rather than have to deal with, you know, hundreds of separate organizations to get that food out there.
And
so
Ellen,
it's really an efficient way.
Right. And Ellen, we're talking about millions of pounds of food.
Yes.
Millions of pounds. So how does this food get distributed?
So the agency partners that I mentioned have to demonstrate a few things to us before they can become a partner agency of Second Harvest. They have to show us that they've been around a little while and maybe have a little bit of track record of helping people that we can look at and verify. They have to keep a few records, and they have to be able to show that they can keep the food safely and securely. And that they can abide by a few other things like non-discrimination. And there's just a kind of a memorandum of agreement that we have with each one of our partner feeding programs. They can't charge money for the food that they give out, at least not the food they get from us, and that kind of thing. So that way we can kind of have a little bit of control in the process.
Yeah, you don't want people to take the food and then make a profit off of it.
Well, and that would cease to be donated food at that
point. That's right.
Yeah.
So right now we are all facing this dreadful COVID-19, which every day we learn about a new sign and symptom to look out for, from blood clots to headaches to everything. But right now, what does the need look like? What does the community need like now in the pandemic versus before?
I'll tell you the honest truth.
Like in normal times,
normal times. Well, in normal times, our distribution is enough food for about 150,000 meals a day. So that's ordinary times. Again, and that wasn't even enough, right? So right now we are, and since about the middle of March, have been distributing much closer to 300,000 meals a day.
Say
so
that again.
300,000 meals a day versus, throughout our six counties.
Versus
150,000.
Wow.
So a doubling, really, of, yeah. of our support. Now, in terms of how that meets the need, we don't really know because there's so many people out there that are struggling right now. It's hard to quantify. But one way that we kind of keep a little bit of track of that is that we, on our website, we have a food finder where people who are in need of food can go on our website. They type in their zip code, and it'll list some of our partners that are near them that they can turn to help with food. And we know that the searches online, the searches for that food assistance, went from about 35 per week, okay? I'm sorry, 35 per day, usually in a typical day, to over 1,600 searches
so
a day.
So who is hungry? What is your search? What is it in
yeah.
Indicative of who are the hungry people?
Yeah, well, they're people that are ordinary working folks, the majority of them who have not managed to bring home enough food or I'm sorry, enough money to buy food. They're people that you know, through no situation or circumstance,
no fault of their own.
Yeah, exactly. They're you know, either furloughed and waiting to get back to work, waiting for that next paycheck. We know that this is going to have a kind of a long economic tail to it, even after the virus is gone. So we're really trying to plan for a long-term relief effort here, really more of a marathon than a sprint. But we know there are a lot of families, a lot of seniors out there that are find themselves in that situation, especially when they can't even get out if they're in a high-risk group.
Do people have to come to get it, or do you have volunteers that drop off food as well?
Well, at our facilities, we are distribution centers, so those partner agencies are
we'll
really the ones who
yeah.
come get it from us, and then people would go to their locations to pick that food up. And so, again, that food finder on our website is designed to help people connect with one of those partner agencies.
And I don't know, Ellen, if you realize this, but they're also serving us here in Brevard, right? So what exactly, how do you guys serve Brevard County residents specifically?
Yeah.
We love all the counties, but we
yeah.
live in Brevard.
Absolutely. It's one of our very most important counties. We have a distribution operation in West Melbourne, and about 80, in normal times, about 80 partner agencies that are located in Brevard County will come and get food from that location. I can tell you that since the coronavirus started, some of them have had to close their doors for a while. Some of them are operated by, you know, older, you know, volunteers and so yeah. on. And they just, it's too risky for them to stay open. And but there are still in the county somewhere around 60 partner agencies that are using our service. And we are moving about 1 million pounds a month, or 1 million meals, rather. 1 million meals.
You can't whistle. Can you whistle?
Yeah.
No, I can't.
You can whistle. You can whistle. That
right.
deserves a whistle.
Right. So, you know, hats are off to those all of those 60 partner agencies that are out there doing the very best they can to get the food into the hands of all of those people that are struggling right now. And we are, you know, we are doing our best to move that food out as quickly
yeah,
as possible.
Yeah, and you know what? I like, you know, he touched on a very interesting topic there, Ellen. You know, a lot of the volunteers who are helping in our community are people who are retired.
Sure.
Oh, grandmothers, grandfathers, you know, people who quit work early, maybe don't have a job, whatever. And they have to be careful in this pandemic.
Yes.
Because you don't know who's got it. You don't know who's coming to receive the food or which organization you're exchanging hands with, handshakes or whatever.
Sure.
You know, and that of course is something we should talk about later on in another show. Right. But we may want to put that on our website about the food bank, looking for volunteers.
Yes.
And
I actually just put it on. And just for the listeners that might not be able to get to the website right away, there's a phone number, 733-1600. That's 321-733-1600, where Brevard County Volunteer Opportunities, you can call there. They're looking for food sorting, assisting and feeding partners with loading of food and light warehouse.
Right. I mean, that's amazing. But what would we do without volunteers, right? Everyone who was sitting
sure.
at home have an hour to give per week.
Well, and you know, there's
something.
A lot of kids that are going to college and need some volunteer hours on their resumes and so forth. So, I mean, now's the time if you've got even a older teenager or a young adult that needs some college assistance.
They build character too by watching Compassion, which we talk about all the time.
Yeah, it's nice.
So so for our listeners who are tuning in, we're talking with Greg Higgison, and he is the Chief Development Officer at Second Harvest Food Bank of Central Florida. What a long title, but it's beautiful. When you Google it and see how this got started, it's amazing. It's all about the community giving back. So where does all the money come from to run an operation like this, and how is it spent? Because people do give money. I mean, and we're hoping that people will donate after they listen to the show as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it is a big operation. It's our main hub is 100,000 square foot facility. Our Brevard County facility is about 12,000 square feet. Up in Volusia County, another 10,000 square feet. So it is a lot of operational things to keep going. We have 22 refrigerated trucks on the road all the time, picking up food and so on. So there is a considerable cost. We in food banking, we like to say every time we move the food or touch it, it costs money, and that's really the truth. Whether it's refrigerating it or just moving it around, but to get that out to the partner agencies is relatively expensive. Now the good news is we have the ability, because we deal in mostly donated food, to really multiply the value of that money. And because the food is donated and our cost is really an operational side of things, the food is actually worth much more than it costs us to operate. So,
true.
So for example,
and gas prices are down right now, which
they
is
are,
a plus.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
But a dollar to our mission can put about $9 worth of food out to the community. So there's a really good, kind of return on investment. When it comes to that, where does the money come from is a great question. We have some really excellent people out there in the community who are individuals. I'm talking about
like our sponsor today, Paul Bouvier and Associates.
Yes, bless him. Thank you so much.
Bless him for sponsoring this segment. So how can people connect with you all if right now they're having a really hard time? But you know, it's also
sure.
A lot of people feel like it's a stigma attached to reaching out and asking, right?
Yeah.
And they shouldn't, because no one's at this time, right. We shouldn't be looking at things like that. But what should someone do if they say, Lord, my pantry is empty and I need some food?
Yeah, you know, in times like these, I think we have more people than ever before who are looking at, gosh, I need help, and for the first time ever, you know, and they just don't have another way. And they don't even know where to begin, quite honestly. And they shouldn't feel bad about it. I know that some of them do, and they exhaust every possibility that they can come up with first. But if you are in need of food assistance, please, there is a great network of partners out there, partner agencies that are there to help you. They are the safety net for the community. And the way to get connected up with one of them is to go to our website at feedhopenow.org. And use our food finder tool. That will allow you to type in your zip code and find, hopefully in your neighborhood or nearby, an emergency food pantry. It'll give you the hours. It'll give you the location. I always recommend calling them first and just verifying the information that you find on the website. Some of them are facing challenges right now and not operating exactly normally. So it's always a good idea to call ahead. But definitely, you know, take that step. Don't let your kids go hungry. Don't feel like somebody else needs it more than I do necessarily. So
I was
won't
just
call
gonna say that's probably yeah. how some people think too.
Well, this is the first time people have had to tap into some of these services that.
No, but they're out of a job.
Exactly.
Furloughed.
But that's what I'm saying. It's new to a lot of people, and so they probably do have those feelings of guilt and
they
like
do.
And that I can't figure this out for myself.
Right.
And
do
so
you have
forth,
to have a criteria? Like, I mean, what happens if a teenager decides, well, I want to have 5 meals today and I'm gonna go over there again? You know, you do have some people that unfortunately they may want to take advantage of a situation that's not for them, right? So is there like a criteria for this?
You know, what we find is that it's actually not the easiest thing to access this. I mean, for mobile food drops right now.
Yeah, like how do you say to somebody, bring your W-2, let's see how much you made.
I mean, if people who are willing to sit in their car for an hour or two or three before a mobile food drop opens up.
They need it.
They need the help. Yeah. And we're just, you know, we're not going to take the time to make it that much harder.
And there was a local politician on Saturday.
Randy Fine.
Had,
I saw that.
Had a huge food drive. And I heard that people were out the night before and sleeping in line.
Even the Melbourne Mosque. The mosque had one. And our friend Red Al-Shabi told me, I hope I'm saying his name correct, they had over 200 cars in the line.
Yeah.
And they had to cut it off at a point where there were still cars in front of the mosque and around the mosque waiting for that bag of food that they were giving them.
But that tells you about the need.
And we should I'm so grateful for people like you, Greg Higginson, with the Second Harvest Food Bank. So right now, what does it look like next year for you all at the food bank?
Boy, I'll tell you, we started this thing out in the relief effort thinking, well, let's have a 90-day plan because, this is going to be with us for a little while. But that quickly became a 180-day plan because, as we look at how many people have been laid off in Central Florida, whether it's restaurants, whether it's, hair cutters or theme park workers or all of the associated businesses.
You could write a book.
You really could.
I swear to God, I feel like you could take a look at your whiteboard that you're writing on every day about the need for food, and you could write a book called Food Bank. Because people don't think about this. You know, we think about technology and everything else, but there's so many people going hungry.
Yeah, basic needs are one of the things that are really going to pop up quickly on people's radar. So what we are hoping is that as people get back to work, you know, it's kind of a slow process economically to recover from something like this. We saw that back in the recession, the Great Recession times. That lasted, if you were at the kind of the higher end of the wealth spectrum, it took, maybe a year to get back on track. For the middle class, it took a good 5 years to get back on track. And if you were already at the lower end of that when it started, most of those people never got back on track. Financially. And so, this is going to be a little bit different situation, hopefully, and maybe come back a little bit more quickly than that. But we are preparing for a new normal.
I was just going to say,
that's all we can say.
So what is the new normal going to look like? Because we've had so many shows where we talk about food, water, and shelter, whether it's in the environment, the homeless people can't afford to work. Where does this fit in right now with humanity? How do we get more people to say, this is true?
Right.
They have to donate if they can afford to, either time, money, energy.
Sure.
I mean, where do they donate? Yeah. Is there a website? You give us the website.
As we mentioned, we've doubled our output. We've doubled our mission overnight, essentially. And what we are hoping is that people will continue to get involved and to support us financially and to volunteer their time at the level that they're doing it now, because this is great. But what we fear is that as soon as the virus goes by and people get back in their situations, that that they look elsewhere. And I understand that people get tired, and it even is donor fatigue type of thing to deal with. But the community is going to need this for a long time, and we're going to be there. We're going to keep doing what we can do. But we can only do what we do because we have generous people out there that haven't been so badly affected that basic needs are an issue for them and they feel like they can share with other people. Yeah. And that's what it's about.
And, in addition to what you all are doing with feeding so many people and giving out meals, you also transformed a lot of lives for the economically challenged adults. You had like a 16-week culinary program that helped people. Tell us a little bit about that in a minute or two. That sounds like a really cool thing to do because you get people off minimum wage jobs as well.
Right. So we have so many people that have overcome some kind of a personal difficulty in their lives, and that all they really need to get on track in a way that's self-fulfilling is some training, and some marketable job skills. And so we had a culinary training program. We have a culinary training program. We've graduated more than 350 people into jobs out there. These are commercial kitchen jobs in resorts and theme parks, hotels, places like that. Better than minimum wage jobs. These are actually like line cook level people. You know, unfortunately, right now with everything shut down,
it has to be
it's a little bit on hold because there are really no jobs to put them into. And in fact, a lot of the people that have graduated are kind of in a holding pattern.
No, they're back coming for food.
Yeah, isn't
that a good program though?
It's a great
program. When you think about how many people on food stamps, or they've lost a job, or their mom and dad sitting at home not knowing what to do education wise or trade wise, and here comes the Second Harvest Food Bank and says, we're going to teach you how to be a chef.
And hospitality is a huge industry.
We all go to these resorts, and you don't know, maybe we were served at the Caribbean or one of these nice places at Disney by someone who actually went into your program.
It's just one more way that we can attack the issue of hunger, is by helping people be self-sufficient.
Yeah. So what happens if right now there's someone who's sitting and listening to Viewpoint with Sita and friends, and they say, you know what, I can help in some way. What do you want to say to that person?
You know, if it were a post-hurricane period or something like that, we'd be calling for volunteers, we'd be calling for non-perishable food and funds. Right now, we mostly need funds because we're having to make up that extra food with a lot of purchased food in addition to the donated food. And so that is our biggest need right now by far. So if you are somebody that hasn't been too terribly affected financially and have that money that you can share to help other people, we will turn that into $9 for every dollar of food going out to the community. Feedhopenow.org is the best way to do that. If that's something that you're interested in, you can find out more information online that way.
Yeah, as a community, we have to be prepared, not just for now, but later on.
Because people will stop getting hungry.
We've all had hunger pains. We all have know people who have lost jobs or who are furloughed, or they've got children and they've got to keep that roof over their head.
That's right.
They've got to pay the utilities. People are going without medication right now. And a lot of people will not buy the food to feed their families.
I was a little nervous
themselves.
To think about those cars that were in line, thinking how many people were actually living in those cars.
Right.
And just kind of pulling up.
Or how many are sitting in those lines waiting for the food, and they're anxious if their tank run out of gas.
That's right.
A lot of tough choices right now.
Exactly.
So thank you so much. This was such a really...
It's enlightening. And again, to go on the website, feedhopenow.org, you'll find out, just like I just did, you'll find out how many great organizations are involved with the Second Harvest Food Bank. Greg, thank you so much for being with us. And for our first guest, who is Jennifer Glass with Great Scott Productions, I've put all of their information on there as well. Thank you to all of our sponsors and Sita every week for coming up with some fantastic guests to share.
We have some good friends that love our show.
You really do.
When you speak from your heart, things work out really well.
Always.
And that's how we find our guests. We find people who are like-minded.
That's right. So tune in next week at 1 o'clock for another great edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
And you're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, Merritt Island, FM 94.7.
You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.